Welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women over 50 across the globe. You don't have to be a Mother Teresa to make an impact on the world. Sometimes the small acts and achievements can create the biggest ripples. I'm Katie Day and we're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh, sometimes they may make you cry, and they will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing the very beautiful and awesome Gina Miller, who says she's over 50, but frankly, looking at her, looks about 30. Gina is the founder of SCM Group, a modern client-centric investment management company, underpinned by 100% transparency, with the founders investing alongside clients on exactly the same fees and terms. So what are the three things we need to know about Gina? She has launched three online lifestyle brands, scmdirect.com, scm50.com, and moneyshe.com. She is passionate about honesty and trust in the UK financial services industry and started the True and Fair campaign in 2012, calling for a code of ethics and 100% transparency. Gina is also a passionate vocal philanthropist, and founded Miller Philanthropy in 2009, which takes a lateral entrepreneurial approach to social inequality and charitable giving. Gina, thank you so much for being willing to be part of Creating Ripples.
My absolute pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about your background and where you've come from and how you've got to where you are today.
I grew up in South America. I'm half Peruvian, half Guyanese.
Oh my gosh!
Yes, quite exotic.
What a fascinating combination.
Yes, and that brings with it a real sort of hundreds of years of knowledge and experience from quite a matriarchal background, which I always say, people ask me, where did my vision start from? I think I was born with them. I was born feisty and I was born fearless because of my extraordinary grandmother and mother. So, you know, it's not something that I'm going to leave behind when I die either. It's going to carry on with my daughters. So
fantastic.
I think my life loves and values and principles is something that I was born with and I will pass on. I grew up with three brothers and so complete tomboy. We didn't have television. My brothers had lots of Marvel comic books. So I grew up thinking I was Wonder Woman, much earlier than
it started
in Western press.
Yeah. Being super,
I already at the age of 5 or 6 would tie a blanket around my neck and try jumping off a tree. So completely fearless. But that upbringing also gave me the privilege of seeing and being part of society, which was very privileged, but also through my father's work as a barrister and attorney general, of seeing people who were in dire straits and really needed help. So I would go along with him. And his words always inspired me, his actions always inspired me. So I've been inspired by both sides of my family. There's a John Mortimer play called A Voyage Round My Father.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a line in it which he writes, "My father sent words into the darkness as if they were soldiers into battle."
Oh my gosh.
That was my father. And everything he said inspired me and made me think that with love, with kindness, with words, we could do so much. So it wasn't just about money. It was using every faculty we had to make a difference to others. And that was in me from as long back as I could remember.
My goodness me. So whereabouts did you grow up?
I grew up in Guyana till I was 10. But my father was a very active politician. It was a time when we had a dictator and he heard rumours that we were threatened as a family. His deputy had been blown up in a bomb and killed. And so my elder brother and I were sent quietly to the UK to be safe.
Okay.
So I arrived in the UK at 10 years old. Very cold. For me, I found it cold in every way.
Yeah.
I couldn't understand why people didn't hug each other, why they didn't touch each other, why they didn't smile so much. I was in a boarding school, which I absolutely hated. Never been away from home, didn't see my parents very much. And so all the fearlessness I had came to the fore and I suddenly had to grow up. So at the age of 10, I had to be independent, self-sufficient, and really not cry, which was a tough thing. But I hid my emotions for many, many years because that's the only way I could survive in boarding school. Then at the age of 14, I moved to another boarding school in Eastbourne.
Ah!
And discovered something which was really joyous for me, which was Eastbourne is the sort of place lots of people go to retire. So I volunteered to go and help out in an old people's home.
Interesting.
And I came across people who had such incredible stories about their lives, but also were very quite well off, some of them very well off, but nobody really came to see them. No family, and they were so unhappy, and I talked to them. And this one gentleman, who was always in the most beautiful Italian clothes, beautifully turned out, he said to me, Gina, the reason I'm unhappy is because I've wasted my life.
Oh my goodness.
He was very successful, I found out, at business, but he pushed his family away, he didn't have many friends, he wasn't a very kind person. He told me this himself. Mm. And I thought, I'm never going to do that with my life. And that really inspired me to be different.
That's an amazing story. I wonder how many people only have that realization right at the end when it's too late to do something about it.
Which is why I felt so blessed.
Yeah.
And at that time, around that time, there were a series of things that happened. I'm a complete fatalist. I think things happen for a reason.
Yep, me too.
And I was watching television back at school one night, and the riots happened in Bristol at the Black and White Cafe. Mm-hmm. And there were all these interviews with people being beaten. That it was just so horrifying to me to see children being beaten up and hearing their stories and their poverty and why they were in gangs. And then I decided that I would also help as much as I can. So the things came together, the stories. Right. So that's why everything I've ever done from that point forwards has always been with what I now formally call conscious capitalism, which is I see every day I work hard, but it's to earn as much as possible, to give away and help as much as possible. And that's something I've done from that time forwards.
I love that phrase, conscious capitalism. Because capitalism gets really bad press around the world, which annoys me because there's so many amazing people doing amazing things with the money that they have. But nobody ever hears about that. You know, it's done quietly, and obviously that's the right driver, that's the right motivation. It's not done to say, look how fantastic I am. It's done quietly, but I get really cross with the bad press that capitalism has.
But without stable societies and economies, we can't actually ensure that the vulnerable in society are looked after.
Of course.
So it is true, you're absolutely right. But also, I think it's wrong to just see capitalism in terms of money. Because structures we build, infrastructure, investment in communities, that's all capitalism. And it's something that started here in the UK. I love history. I've always been fascinated by history. And when I learnt about the Victorian philanthropists, I was, you know, fascinated that the soap bar care for Lever Brothers because he wanted his workforce not to get infections. You know,
it's
amazing, extraordinary.
Isn't it, when you put
those stories, you look at where shoes, you know, the Clark family, that whole idea, again, because so many diseases the children got. You look at the stories and, you know, the ripple effects of what they did, you know, with their conscience, with their workforce and their factories, really transformed society.
It did.
And I just think those things are incredible. You know, a bar of soap that changed how hygiene and all the diseases we were getting in the workforce. You know, I think those are fascinating people.
Yeah.
And we don't hear enough of them.
We don't hear enough of them. And you're right. And when I think of Cadbury as well, who set up a whole village in Bourneville to look after the whole... And it was such a family-run business. And before it was sold out, it was always run as that incredible family business. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot we can learn from the Victorian
philanthropists. And what I think is, which is why I started my foundation in 2009, is because... society, we are tipping back to that Dickens Tale of Two Cities, you know, and the rich are getting richer. You hear the statistics all the time. But there is a massive undercurrent of real poverty that we don't hear about. And I worry about that. And that's why I want to encourage that message that people who are successful have to be more engaged. And, you know, and the phrase I use is give back to the society that affords their success. Because without it, what will be the world their children, their legacy, and it will be a destructive one.
It will. And also it's about, for me, it's about recognizing that actually everybody on the planet is equal. So where we come from, what we have or don't have from materially or financially is actually irrelevant, because if you strip back the outer shell of the human being and just look at the soul, we are all equal.
It's that phrase, isn't it? There, by the grace of God, go I.
Absolutely.
And I definitely agree with that so much, is that, you know, people say about their accident of birth. Actually, I could have been born as someone who is poor, you could have been, you know, we don't know. We are actually an accident of birth, and it's what we do with our lives. That's why it's so important that we do something with it.
We do something with it. I remember Mother Teresa being asked, how were you not overwhelmed with what you were faced with in Calcutta? How, I mean, where do you start with that? And she, her reply was brilliant. You start by loving one person.
Absolutely.
And that's what life is about, isn't it? And it's about creating those ripples. You know, you start with one person, with one act, with one giving, whatever it is, whatever you can do, however small you think it is. But the ripples are potentially huge from that.
It's incredible. I was talking to a young lady the other day. She came to see me because her mother's very worried. They're from a very wealthy family, and the daughter isn't really doing very much with her life. She's had a great education, but not doing very much. And mother said, I need you to take her down to one of your charities. And I said, no, I'll just talk to her. So I came. She came to see me and she said, oh, well, the problem is, you know, we could do this, we could do that, but we don't have enough money. They're from a very wealthy family. So I said, okay, I'll see you next week. But in the meantime, I want you to walk through a park. Every day, walk through one of the parks, a different park, see somebody on a bench and sit next to them and talk to them.
Oh my gosh.
And she said, I can't do that. You know, I said, no, even worse than that, I want you to make sure they look like a down and out. If the poorest person, not somebody's wealthy, I want you to be kind to somebody. I said, because you do not know if that person is lonely, depressed, considering suicide. You don't know where they are. And your words of kindness, your connecting with them, your humanity could save their lives.
Absolutely. Wow. Wow. Did she take up the challenge?
Oh, absolutely. She's a very different person. That was like a few months ago. She's a very different person now. Because one of the stories she told me, there was a homeless person on the street who, she said, but Gina, he was a teacher. She had this perception that it'd be somebody. And I said, yes, because he became an alcoholic, he lost his family. But those stories. So now what she's discovered is, she did it at University of English, she's writing a book of all, they're going to be called The Bench Tales.
Oh my goodness. What an amazing story.
So it's that sort of showing somebody that they can really make a difference.
Yeah.
That I love doing. Yeah. So it's not, you know, I think we concentrate so much about philanthropy, can be about money, and I want people to see that they have so much power within them. That's nothing to do with money.
Yeah.
The kindness is incredible.
Random acts of kindness.
But it's can change the world, can't they? Incredible power that we have as human beings.
We really do. We really do. And I, walking here actually to get the tube to come and see you this morning, there was an old chap who's dressed up in kind of old military gear with the beret on and medals, and he fell over near the Embankment tube station. And what was amazing was that instantly everybody rushed to him.
Oh, wonderful.
Are you okay, sir? Are you okay? Do you want to come? Can we get you a cup of tea? Come sit down. And I thought, you know what? We are all rushing. But actually, when something happens, some inner instinct within us just clicks in straight away. And that's very few people would carry on walking in that situation. You know, it is so instinctive within us as human beings, actually, to be kind, isn't it? And I think sometimes in the business of the 21st century, we can actually forget that inner core of kindness and compassion that we
but
all have.
But talking, I'm always intrigued and slightly amazed that I talk to people about where they work, whatever, and I ask them about, they don't know anything about the people they work with. They go to
isn't
work
that
with
the
people,
truth?
And they talk to them, but they make judgments about them, but they don't really know them.
Yeah,
people sort of don't talk. I mean, women are better than this than men, but you know, men don't. They couldn't even tell me if they have children, but they don't become
that connect
connected. But also, they'd be so much happier with each other. There'd be so much forgiveness and collaboration if people knew each other better in the workplace.
Yeah.
And these are the people that they spend the majority of the time with. Exactly. So I'd say, so you are going to spend 90% of your time with this person that you've never really spoken to. You know, more than you go home and speak to your wife or partner, whoever else, but you know more about them. You should try connecting. And there is, not so much in America, in the UK, there is a real sort of coldness there that people don't connect in that way. And I think it would be so much better if we did, you know, a lot of what goes on in the corporate community is quite cold, and we need some sort of warmth in there. Because my view is that if we create the warmth in it, then they'll be able to transfer that to their clients. And that will then create more of a sense of responsibility. So it's that warmth that I try and encourage people to engender in corporate and cultures and environments.
Well, it's the emotional intelligence, isn't it? The side of leadership and working.
So important. I try really hard not to use words and tags like that because I think sometimes it can have the opposite effect.
Yeah.
And I've noticed, I would say that you see things going through waves. And a few years ago, it was, you know, everyone was a... you know, a family office advisor or a this advisor, and now everyone's a wellness advisor. Yeah. We go through these phases,
you're right.
Then something else dies, but actually the fundamentals are always there.
Yeah.
The common sense. You know, I did a talk the other day and I stood up with a group of women and I put my hand up and I say, I just want to tell you all that I'm a C student. This is a young, it's a group of young ladies doing their A-levels. And of course, they're all focused on being A's.
Ah.
And I said, I'm a C. And they all sort of said,
wow.
I said, because I believe... we need consciousness, we need kindness, and we need confidence. And they were, oh my gosh, and, you know, that's how I started off.
That's lovely.
Just getting them to think differently. Because everyone's so, you know, there's a term I came across in the UK which I find quite frightening in the whole way we're pushing our children to be perfect in academia, is that we're making them all mantelpiece children.
Oh,
isn't that a great term?
That's a very good... Oh, that's a scary term, but isn't that accurate, though?
It's so... Because we're losing those soft skills and those kindness. And we're making them all into... I thought that was a wonderful phrase. So I sort of...
Very clever phrase.
Because, yes, you know, we have responsibilities to how we're teaching and what we're teaching to our young people as well.
We do. Gosh. Wow. So where are you today?
So in my corporate life, I seem to be attracted, it's probably back to my fearless tomboy days, but I have been attracted to very male-dominated industries and used my intelligence, both emotional and female intelligence, to succeed in them. The first I failed in, which was wanting to become a criminal barrister.
Oh.
And in the UK in the 80s, it was very tough. You know, as an ethnic minority woman, trying to go to the bar, I was told quite point blank that I could do family law or become a solicitor, but going to the criminal bar was not something that would be looked, that I'd do well at and would be looked on kindly. So I took a year out, which is always an interesting thing to do because you see life in a very different way. And long story short, I ended up working for BMW, driving cars.
Did you?
I'm an absolute petrol head. and so I discovered the world of business and that I had a knack for it. Don't get me wrong, my legal training has been incredibly, it's been allowed me to be very powerful in what I do. Because it's as a discipline, it's a fantastic discipline to go through the legal profession. So it's always held me in good stead. But then I ended up working with BMW. I helped them launch, defranchise their business and launch BMW Fleet in the UK.
How exciting.
And then I get bored fairly easily. I need challenges. So I happened to be at a dinner party and made this comment that actually I'd set up a business that was working incredibly well and I needed another challenge. And so this was in the early 90s. And someone just flip and throwaway comment was, gosh, if you're very good at business and marketing, then you should look at financial services. They have no idea how to market.
Mm.
And I thought, that's interesting. So I started doing some research into financial services companies. And in the UK, they were dominated by big life companies. And they were all looking to launch asset management arms as cash cows. It was the right timing for them. So I decided to launch a financial services marketing agency. That's all we were going to do. And rocked up at the big brands, ended up winning 3 contracts, launched Legal and General Investment Management.
you are brilliant. I mean, I know what the industry was like back then.
Oh yes, I mean, I remember going to a big Scottish brand and sitting in the meeting, and they were sort of 8 men around the table, and I was pitching to rebrand them. And they said, is your boss going to be here? The meeting said, G. Marlowe. I was Marlowe, not Miller in those days. And I said, what do you mean? They said, well, are you the secretary? And I said, no, I'm Gina Marlowe. And they said, what, you're going to launch our business? And I went, well, you haven't heard my pitch yet. I might not be. But if you'd like to award it to me now, then thank you very much. So he decided, there was this one chap at the end of the table who was fairly overweight, red in the face from drinking too much in those days, lots of long lunches. Mm-hmm. And he listened and then interrupted me and said, do you know what an OIC is? And that is an open-ended investment company.
Is it?
So okay. He said, do you know what an OIC is? And I said, oh, isn't that a noise a pig makes? I thought, if you're going to treat me like an idiot, I'll treat you as one. Anyway, I then said, this is what it is, explain what it is, because I've one lesson. If you're going to take on and be feisty, you've got to know your stuff inside out.
Yep.
You've got to read and know more than the other men in the room, predominantly. You've really got to know your stuff. So I did this. Anyway, walked away with the pitch.
Fantastic.
Rolled the clock forwards, and I ended up building a very successful business in Bath, Bristol, and London. Ended up with 26 clients in total. Then 2006, sold my agency and decided to retire, which is, yes, interesting time, because in the back of all of this, I also had decided when I was going to study law that I was deliberately going to have my child early so that I could grow up with her, she could grow up with me. I didn't want to have a career break. Sure. This was a very conscious decision I made, that I was going to have my child early. Mm-hmm. So I planned all of that, but people don't remember in the UK. This happened in the 80s. There were an awful lot of strikes. Mm. And my daughter was born on the night, my eldest daughter, that the midwives were on strike.
Oh my goodness.
So she's now 27.
Wow.
But her mental age is 5 or 6. She was starved of oxygen at birth.
Gosh. Oh.
So I had been building my business. I was single for a long time, and I had this child that I refused to send away.
Wow.
But as she was becoming a teenager, her real difficulties were coming to the fore. Her real lack of confidence, her, you know, what was she going to do with her life? She became very disruptive. So I, selling the agency was because I needed to look after her.
Right.
I took 2 years out, then met my now husband, but also discovered what an incredibly intelligent person somebody like her is. Mm. And the intelligence that she carries is something we've forgotten about. It is that innate spiritual intelligence that sees things in a very black and white way. Mm. And she has a heart of gold. She is the kindest person. Actually, lots of people on the special needs spectrum are incredibly kind. Mm. And have qualities that we don't value enough in society. Spent my time working with lots of charities at that point, doing great things with her. We climbed around the world. We had an amazing time. We had an absolutely amazing time. And then the crisis, I'd met my husband, and then the crisis happened in 2008.
Right.
We lost lots of money.
Oh, wow.
So did lots of friends and family. And what I looked at it and I saw the state of the financial services sector. And I said to my husband, this sector needs me. We need to launch a challenger brand that will take back the industry to the place it should be, which is respecting that it's other people's money they look after and that the service they provide is a very responsible one.
Absolutely.
Because without money without money when you're old, in the OAP will stand for old and poor. And it's a massive responsibility. So I now am spending my entire time challenging the industry and getting it to break itself down, to build itself back up to what it should be, which is looking after people's money, respecting people, and doing it in a fair way, both in terms of fees and transparency. So I challenged the industry, the regulators, both in the UK and Europe. I have managed to get text into 3 EU directives, and the fight carries on because now the industry is spending millions trying to water it all down. Mm. But that is my goal at the moment. My legacy for the next few years will be to make this industry a better place than it is.
Gee, we so need you. And you were so right when you said to your husband, the industry needs you. It really does. I mean, I only wish there were more people like you across the world, because it is desperately, desperately needed. And when I make my millions, I know where I'm coming to get advice of how to, of where to invest it. Sadly, we're out of time. You know, I knew I should have gone for the hour interview spot rather than the half hour when I was putting my...
Maybe another time.
I'll come back and interview you again if I may.
Of course.
It's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you. It's very kind of you to interview me.
Wonderful. This has been Katie Day, the High Heeled Leader with Creating Ripples, the programme where women over 50 are showcased as the fabulous, amazing and awesome human beings we are. Coming up in future weeks, we have many more wonderful and inspiring women with their unique stories, including Baroness Paula Udin from Bangladesh, who arrived in this country, the UK, with nothing and now runs an amazing disability charity. Make sure you tune in, feel inspired, and start thinking about how you create your own ripples in life. Thank you for listening.